Good morning! This is Bill Sininger from Prolific Games, creators of Flaptastic and Sasquatches, and our new game, Witch Slapped, available in game stores everywhere. And you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Scrolling for April 25th, 2017. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
Yeah, we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, it's May Day.
Excellent. Well, you know, that's the reason why we have the pole set up here in the basement. I can work on my abs.
You're dancing.
My dancing, of course.
So happy May Day for those of you who are still celebrating May Day.
You throw the May Day pole up, you bring out the flowers, you run around the pole with the
ribbons. Yeah,
just like we all do now.
There's a lot of movies that feature that, but boy, that is not a cultural thing that we do anymore, is it?
The Festival of Flora, we do not. No. It seems like that's gone away. I would say, if I had to bet, the Chinese New Year will grow as far as popularity.
I think it has already.
And nothing against Columbus Day. I think it will diminish over time of its sort of importance.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that we won't celebrate it like we're celebrating May Day right now.
There you go. Happy May Day to all of you that celebrate May Day. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And boy, have I not seen a movie this week if you don't count MST3K. I did get to see quite a few TV shows this week. You know TV, that thing you don't watch that you pay for?
That movie producing box that's
yes.
in your home?
I got to see the Bill Nye Saves the World. This is a new series on Netflix. It is a 30-minute talk show about science featuring Bill Nye, the science guy.
The science stuff. What is that?
Yeah. It's amazing. I loved Bill Nye growing up. I was a PBS kid growing up, and I loved all of any information I could get. I was usually getting through PBS. Bill Nye was my scientist. He taught me so many things about scientific method and learning and finding information. Now he's back. He is making a show for middle-aged people. This is a show for me.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, the kid at heart.
The kid at heart. This is Bill Nye doing the same things that he did in the old show.
Okay.
But still making it interesting for an adult audience. I'm not sure that my kids would watch this in the same way that I do. They still like the Bill Nye the Science Guy, the old reruns. They still watch those.
I like the science literacy stuff. Mm-hmm. I end up watching a lot of TED Talks and things of that nature. Why? Because you're just trying to glean some information.
Yeah, TED Talks. There's an MST3K TED Talks joke that I thought of when you brought that
I'm
up.
Sure, I'm sure.
Yes, there is.
TED Talks are ripe for humor.
Yes.
Because there's so many of them, and there's a presentation style, and because there's a presentation style, I'm going to present some important facts. Yeah. In fact, there's a short on YouTube that makes fun of the entire presentation style. Here, I'm going to show you a graph.
Yeah, Bill Nye has a presentation style. This show is very interesting. It is a science piece. There's a segment where he's actually doing actual science. There's a segment where he is having a panel of experts to talk about a topic. And there are segments where they send correspondents out with cameras to different parts of the world to explore different things that are happening in science. I really highly encourage you to click on Netflix and watch some Bill Nye Saves the World. If you want science fiction, though, Doctor Who is back on the air.
I heard it's a hoot.
It is. We didn't talk about Doctor Who last week because we had our panel last week. Thanks again to Chris Mao and Deb Hofelder for joining us for our Doctor Who panel at the Blue Box Cafe last week. That was so much fun.
It sounded great. It sounded great.
Just a bunch of nerds sitting around talking about something we love.
Well, and it does have an incredible following. So we've gotten through the pilot, which you're saying was a soft reboot.
Yes, they called it the pilot. And it's not a pilot, it's about a pilot.
Okay.
It's very Stephen Moffat-y.
And then you've got through the second episode. So this is released weekly.
Yes, on Saturday nights, that's when Doctor Who happens. Between Svengoolie and the old classic reruns of Doctor Who on PBS, you've got new episodes of Doctor Who 2 weeks in a row. 2 weeks in a row, Chip.
And it's built up pretty nice.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful. Now, how many episodes are part of this series?
We're going to get about 13 episodes this season. And
that'll get you into the summer, my friend.
Yeah. And then it'll come back at Christmas, and something will happen at Christmas, and we're not quite sure when it's going to happen.
Well, they've talked about the new doctor.
Mm-hmm.
They sent out a, which I found out, initially I thought it was a definite who the next doctor was going to be.
Oh, no. No, you posted something on the Facebook page that I did not acknowledge, because that was not a definite absolute.
Well, in fact, I saw there's a different person that mm-hmm. they are. This may have been sent out as a, what is it?
A decoy.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. We don't know who's going to be the next actor to play the doctor. And maybe it was floating a trial balloon. Maybe it was, hey, big community that really adores this thing, what if we got this guy to do the job?
All right. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that will come up. You got to watch some more Mystery Science Theater 3000.
There's still more Mystery Science Theater 3000 for you on Netflix.
Did you finish the season?
I have not. I have restrained myself and not watched all 14 episodes of the new Mystery Science Theater 3000. I've gotten through 12. Episode 12 is the one that has my name on it.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. When you say it has your name in the credits.
In the credits.
All the people who would put some money
in. All 48,000 of us that put in some money on the Kickstarter. All of our names are in the credits. Mine appears on episode 12, and so does Mark Hamill.
So you and Mark are pretty close now.
Star Wars, Chip. Star Wars.
So that's beautiful. Now, there are 14 episodes to this season. There is a Christmas episode.
Which I haven't watched yet. That's episode 13.
And although Christmas usually is in December, there is a Christmas in July. So you never know with Steve.
I will probably not make it to July with that one. I will probably see it in the next couple of days. I'm trying to restrain myself and not be too exuberant about Mystery Science Theater. But those of you who liked the show in the past, this new season is a new season of this show, and it is really funny. You should really tune in.
Now, there was something going on in Chicago this last weekend that was pretty big, that people go down and hang out at. And that is what, Steve?
That is the Chicago Comics and Entertainment Expo. C2E2 happened this weekend, and I did not get a chance to go. But I did go to their Twitch station, and I did watch quite a few of their panels that they broadcast live on Twitch, and I got to see Frank Miller and Stan Lee live on stage together for the first time.
Together for the first time.
Yeah.
Now, Frank Miller, we know him. He put together Sin City.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see anything with Daredevil, you're typically thinking of Frank Miller, because this was a pretty much dead character that he took over and made it the myth. So the hand that was in Iron Fist, Daredevil, Karen Page that was in Daredevil. And he also was a person who brought Iron Fist and Luke Cage into the Daredevil fold. That was eventually expanded to some other writers.
But along with the Kingpin that he kind of pilfered from the Spider-Man universe.
Oh, that's right. Uh-huh. That's right.
Frank Miller is a really interesting writer, and we see a lot of his work. Stan Lee is a very interesting character at 94 years old, deaf as a piece of wood on the street. The man cannot hear anything, but he has something to say about what he thinks that Frank Miller had to say. The play between those two is not as wonderful as I thought it should be, because Stan just can't hear him. So there's a timing issue.
The deal, though, is Stan Lee is still going out and meeting people.
And excited.
He's a performer.
Yes.
Okay, so, you know, he was the guy that, for those who didn't read the comics when back in the 60s and 70s, he was the guy that introduced all the cartoons back in the 80s. Like, this is Stan Lee.
And he's still that guy at 94 years old.
And for our young people who are listening, he's the guy that keeps showing up in all the Marvel movies.
His cameos. He loves doing that. He will talk to you about his cameos anytime you say the word cameo to him, and you got a half an hour of Stan Lee talking.
There's only one or two movies that don't have a cameo with him. And so even the Deadpool trailer that they brought for Deadpool 2, the extended one, has a Stan Lee present. He's got to have recorded a whole bunch of stuff that they can slice in with. Yeah. 94 years old, God bless him.
Yeah, he's still doing it. It was fun to watch the two of them interact, and I have high expectations for what we'll see from the things that they've created for the future. Maybe not those guys' work, but what they inspired is amazing.
I'm Stan Lee, True Believers.
Excelsior! You got a chance to see another 30 for 30 on ESPN. This one is called One and Not Done. What's that one about?
This is about John Calipari, who's currently the coach of University of Kentucky. And it's about his career and how he's changed basketball, or how college basketball is presented. For our European listeners, college sports is baffling for you. You're thinking, well, why are these people professionals? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, maybe they are. You never know. That's the joke. All right, so Calipari has won basketball college championship with the University of Kentucky. Before he worked for the University of Kentucky, he was a guy who just, when I say lucked his way into it, he played for a small college. He just worked camps, basically with the equivalent, maybe the AAU camps would be right now. If you had a person playing basketball, in the old days, maybe they'd come to high schools. Now, college basketball coaches tend to go to AAU tournaments, and they played around the United States. They're amateur tournaments where you go and you're going to highlight your basketball skill. And if you know, if you're the University of Illinois or Notre Dame or Wisconsin or Carolina or Duke or any of the great programs, they usually send their coaches out and they're reviewing you to hopefully bring you to play ball for college. And your hope is to play, if you're a basketball player, play in the NBA one day, because it is a special, special place for special players. Calipari started his coaching career at the University of Massachusetts, where he was a head coach. University of Massachusetts, or UMass, is known for Dr. J. That's where he played ball. Dr. J was the big guy when we were kids. And really, there really much of a pedigree for basketball success at the University of Massachusetts. He took them to the Final Four. He had brought in a guy named Marcus Camby, and I'm going to leave it right there, because he left that job to coach in the NBA. It didn't work out so well, but eventually wound his way at Memphis. And Memphis does have a basketball pedigree, not a national championship level, but really good basketball. They've always been a giant killer. They've done real well. And through there, he was able to elevate them to one of the elite teams. So the elite teams are teams like UCLA and Duke and Indiana and Carolina, who have multiple national championships. Memphis is not on that level, but Memphis was starting to recruit on that level and brought in a guy named Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose eventually played for the Chicago Bulls. Now, Derrick Rose and Marcus Camby, it's real important to put this here. Camby accepted some money from an agent, and they had to relinquish there. If you get in probation, they'll basically take away, you were in the Final Four, but you didn't really appear in the Final Four. That gets taken away from history. Well, Derrick Rose, who was cleared by the NCAA, played an entire season, brought within seconds of winning a national championship. Kansas ended up winning that championship. Well, after the season had played out, the NCAA said, we don't think that Derrick Rose performed on his SAT. We don't think he did it. Derrick Rose was from Chicago. His SAT was taken in Detroit. He played his entire season with the blessing of the NCAA, but they had to abandon basically their Final Four presence after the season. So you did this wonderful thing. Well, it didn't really matter for Derrick Rose. He went to play for the Bulls. Well, after that happened, Calipari went to Kentucky, and Kentucky is a blue blood. It is like one of the, if you were a basketball coach, North Carolina, Kansas, Kentucky, UCLA, these are the places you want to coach. You can get typically the recruits that you want, and the NBA had made a rule when he got there. That rule was that you had to play at least 1 year of college ball, or you had to be a certain age to be able to qualify for the NBA draft. Well, Calipari took that as an opportunity. And while North Carolina and Duke and Kansas were recruiting players that they thought would play for multiple years, Calipari set up Kentucky to be, you will come to play with me for 1 year, and then we will send you to the NBA. And he's been working that for, 8 or 9 years now. They have made it. They've won national championships. But they will have a group of kids come in, 5 or 6 of them. They will play 1 year at Kentucky. And then they all will declare for the NBA, and they're all in the NBA the next year. The NBA is full of Kentucky players right now. This is his story. And he is a master motivator, just an incredible kind of guy. Go back and forth. Is he dirty? Is he not dirty? But the point is, I think he's just a person who's taking advantage of the opportunity. He was a poor, poor kid growing up, and he relates to a lot of these basketball players who are poor, poor kids, and he's taking care of them. They love playing for him. He works them hard. But if you are a guy like Bobby Knight, who coached Indiana, who was about education and making men out of you and throwing chairs on the court, you know, Calipari is not your guy. But anyway, fascinating little documentary. All the 30 for 30s are.
That's what I was about to ask you. Are these 30 for 30s still just as good as they were at the beginning?
Anytime you get involved with one, you go, gosh, that's just fascinating. They have the right stories. Mm-hmm. They have the right angles. These are maybe long form, like the old Sports Illustrated articles, long form articles. This is good stuff. This is why we have television.
That's what a good documentary can do. To tell a story in a way that is intriguing, that makes you sit there and watch the rest of the story. Excellent. Opening this week, we've got some great stories coming out. The Handmaid's Tale is coming to Hulu on Wednesday. That's tomorrow. And this is another one of those dystopian future novels from 1985. And we're going to see this version of it on Hulu.
All right, so this is really kind of interesting. The dystopian part of this is that somehow, do they all go to sleep or something? They wake up and they can't remember where they're women,
right?
And basically, because they can't remember, they're thrown into an area that they are going to birth mm-hmm. the next generation of people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is that story of, you know, mankind's going to break free.
Very sci-fi, very interesting, and very theocratic dictatorship is the words that are in the quote here.
Well, there you go. They want to make sure they put a little salt in the wound and move it around a little bit.
Make sure that we're making a message out of this sci-fi. Yeah.
Now, Hulu has a little bit of history in this. They did 1963.
Yeah, the 11-22-63, the Stephen King novel turned into a miniseries. The problem that you and I had with that is how they distributed that weekly instead of as one whole story like Netflix does. They're going to do that again with this one, and maybe we'll wait a couple of weeks and catch up with it so that we can not be waiting.
In fact, I think that's exactly what I'm going to do. This looks interesting to me, mm-hmm. and I'm going to wait till it builds up and I can watch them together.
Yeah. The other series that's coming out is coming out on Stars. This one's American Gods. We've talked about that book, Neil Gaiman, before, mm-hmm. and now we get this rendition again. This is going to be weekly on Stars.
Exactly the same issue.
Mm-hmm.
This starts Sunday, the 30th. I enjoyed reading that book tremendously, and the idea was that the old gods, so Mr. Wednesday is mm-hmm. Odin, mm-hmm. so just to give you a play, and there's Mr. Nancy. So they took all the gods from all the areas,
mm-hmm.
And they, since no one followed anymore, they kind of moved to the United States. They immigrated to the United States, and there is a story with Shadow waking up, Shadow Moon, and he's kind of cloudy. He wakes up in a jail. His wife has just passed away. He's kind of piecing things together, and he runs into Mr. Wednesday, who takes him on sort of as his bodyguard. We're going to see everything through the eyes of Shadow Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's interesting about this is that this series is only going to be the first third of the book. Neil Gaiman has his hands in this. They've expanded some of the characters. They've introduced characters into it. You know, you're going to run into anybody and everybody. And there is a wide variety of actors that you're going to know
mm-hmm.
Playing in this.
Yeah.
So this has gotten great reviews so far.
High expectations for this one.
Oh, my goodness. I look forward to this. We're going to be talking about this as soon as I get an opportunity to see multiple episodes at the same time.
Yeah, you're gonna bank a couple of those before you actually get into it, I think. The Stars, they want your $9.95 a month. And
sure.
Hulu wants their $9.95 a month. And they want to spread their shows over 2 months instead of having you have all 14 episodes all at the same time.
Or you can just join in July.
Interesting. Interesting way of doing things. In the movie theaters, we got one called Buster's Mall Heart. This is Rami Malek, the guy from Mr. Robot, in a very intriguing. The trailer is so interesting. What kind of dark conspiracy has Mr. Robot gotten himself into this week?
This looks like a very good film. I hope it's as good. Mal means bad in Spanish.
That's right.
So anyway, I look forward to seeing this.
Yeah, I would recommend that you click on the trailer in our show notes for that one, because I can't do it justice talking about it. It looks like something I would watch. Also, How to Be a Latin Lover.
Now, this may be the first comedy this year.
Comedy that intrigues you, maybe.
That intrigues me.
Yeah.
It is silly, stupid.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it's going to be rated. This is the type of thing that our kids would laugh at.
I don't know that it's intended for my teenage lifestyle, but it might be. This might be that kind of story. It's from the producers of Instructions Not Included, which is a very fun family comedy. This seems like a very fun family comedy with a lot of inappropriate humor wrapped into it about Latin lover. Yeah.
All right. So the premise of this is there's a young man who he basically wants to live a life of luxury. He ends up hooking up with some older lady who takes care of him. Eventually,
20 years later or so.
Yes, and he's not the same guy.
No.
And so he gets kicked out of the house, and he has to go rediscover himself.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and his family and all the fun things that'll happen there. I look forward to this one. I've heard very good reviews on this one, and I will definitely see that one.
Very funny. See the trailer. I think you'll find the humor.
The trailer is very enjoyable. We got one called Displacement. This is a young physics student who's working on a quantum time anomaly.
Well, it's got the first part that Steve likes.
Yes,
time travel.
I was all over it.
And then it's got like this SNL short feel to it.
The trailer does not sell the story for me. As much as I love the idea, the concept of this story, the trailer really didn't sell it. It might be a great film. I don't know.
Not everybody has big budgets. Right. And the point is that it could turn out to be pretty good. Steve watches Doctor Who, obviously. Yeah.
So big budget is not necessarily a thing that's necessary for a good story. This might be a really good story.
And so when it comes streaming, this could be something to pick up and watch it.
Yep. There is a new version of A Midsummer Night's Dream coming out. This is one of my favorite Shakespeare plays.
Who is this Shakespeare person?
His birthday just passed this weekend, so we've got that going for us. And this is another rendition of one of these plays. It looks fun. It's one of the more fun plays made into a movie. It's a very limited, small budget kind of presentation, but again, that does not mean that it's bad.
Absolutely. This looks like it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's just so much fun. It's such a fun story.
Speaking of fun, Steve.
Oh, boy. Then we get to Casting JonBenet. This is on Netflix. This is bizarre. I couldn't even get through the trailer because there's something to this.
All right, so JonBenet's story is a story I'm not going to go into, but right. It is a bizarre story in itself. And this is a story about casting the cast.
Right, it's a documentary about casting a movie of this bizarre story.
Yeah.
That's three bizarres right on top of each other.
Well, there you go. It opens on Friday. I may catch this eventually just because there's an oddity part of it. And it could be something that you watch and you're fascinated by. It could be something you watch and just, it gets shut down quickly.
The country certainly is fascinated by this JonBenet Ramsey story. There's no doubt about that. And I don't get it. I don't see it.
I don't either. But then that is kind of the story. Why is it last?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. There you go.
That one's on Netflix.
We've got an interesting week.
So many options.
Next week, we actually have the big budget starting to come out.
Yes, all the summer blockbusters. So we've got to get through this week with all these fun, interesting stories to get to those summer blockbusters. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Brings us to our book at our book of the week. Speaking of fun movies, those Pixar movies are fun. And you got a chance to read a book called To Pixar and Beyond, My Unlikely Journey with Steve Jobs to Make Entertainment History. This is by Lawrence Levy, and you have been telling me about this book for a while now.
Now, it was released early November last year, so this book is fairly new. Not quite on the... that's a pretty new book for me to review.
Good job.
All right. I did my best. Got to make sure they're timely. this is an excellent, excellent book.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot written about Steve Jobs' time after he left Apple. He was forced out of Apple. He started up Next.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing is we're in between Next and him returning to Apple.
Mm-hmm.
This is the story, ultimately, of how Steve Jobs became a billionaire. Because Lawrence Levy is a CFO. He was brought in to represent Steve and the company at Pixar. From the time that they were starting to work on Pixar, Steve had invested about $50 million into the company. And the movie wasn't even complete. There's only probably about 10 minutes of Toy Story completed. There was a family atmosphere. It was in this off-beaten path of San Francisco area, right across from an oil refinery, this unassuming building.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew that there was something special going on there. So when Levy was brought in to Pixar, which you know, you're usually thinking, oh, Pixar, we're just going to talk about the creative side. This is about the business side of it.
Interesting.
And I don't want to turn you off on that, because this is as equally as creative and fun, because you will learn so much about how these businesses get built. And you say, well, that sounds like pretty dry. No, no, no. This is incredibly fascinating.
Hmm.
All right, so they had a rotten contract with Disney. Basically, Levy went through the contract with Disney. They felt even if the movies were the best ever, they were performing on Beauty and the Beast level and mm-hmm. things of that nature, they could not really make enough money to make it work. That's if it did really, really well. You know, there was only two or three movies that went over $100 million. Most of them were far less. And, you know, somehow they were going to build a business model around this. We learn a little bit about the negotiations that took place. We learn a little bit about how many of the procedures that they had. Pixar started out as a hardware business. Mm-hmm. They worked with Lucasfilm with it. It was spun off from there. Steve Jobs bought 100% of the stock there. We learned a little bit about how they set this up for initial public offering and IPO. We learned a little bit about stock. We learned about stock options. Once again, this certainly is not selling you on it. But I'm telling you, there's something there
mm-hmm.
that the balancing act of the business with the creative process.
Show business. There is a balance that has to be struck between the business aspect in order to get those creative things done.
Now, Levy spends a lot of time talking about his conversations with Jobs. They lived near each other, and they used to go for walks together. You can see, you know, Jobs maturing as a leader. So, you know, Steve Jobs was basically kicked out of Apple. He was a different person when he returned to Apple.
Mm-hmm.
This is the growth in between there. This is the part where he started allowing the talent to work around him. He started really putting people in the place that would kind of make sure those things happen and get that balance between the creative side and the business side. And, you know, why did Apple do so well when Steve returned? You know, between the iPods and the MacBooks.
And ultimately the iPhone.
Sure. All of these, you can absolutely pinpoint back to Steve's
maturation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Working with Pixar. Mm-hmm. Working with Pixar. Because this is how Steve became a billionaire.
Wow.
This is how Steve became a billionaire.
It's an untold story, really, in a lot of ways.
Sure.
So that is a great find. Thank you for bringing that to us. This is definitely going to go on my list of books that I need to get to.
Well, before we exit this, I'm gonna make it really something that Steve's going to.
Oh, boy. There's time travel.
There's no time travel.
Darn.
But in fact, this could be the Star Wars story too. So this is what I'm doing is I'm gonna bring it into you.
Hmm.
There's Star Wars in here. Pixar was sold into Disney eventually. Levy's kind of searching for himself. Like, what do I do after I've put this together? I didn't think this would happen. Then I put myself into it, and then we made it happen. And now I'm kind of sitting here. What am I going to do? He decides that there's something missing in his life. And so he's looking for something that could bring balance to his life. And he talks a little bit about the middle way. And he talked a little bit about the creative side of a person and then the day-to-day activities that you have to have. And whether it's business or running a family or whatever it is.
All of those things that we have to get done.
So anyway, he starts talking a little bit about meditation, about enlightenment. And he starts working his way into trying to figure out a way to help individuals replicate that. And this is right up your alley, Steve.
This is, all right. Now I will absolutely have to click on this link in our show notes and buy a copy of this book. There's no doubt about it.
So there's a need to be grounded. There's a need for fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
And what can we do to help you become the better you that you wanted to become? I'm not talking New Age stuff. I'm talking about sort of a Buddhist way of looking at that. And that seems very San Francisco.
Sure.
And it seems very much of the tech industry about what they're doing. And the reason why I brought Star Wars up, it seems like that's where the new Star Wars film is moving.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe the Jedi's don't last, and maybe the Sith don't last. The Sith are gone. And maybe there's that each individual has to have a balance between the light and the dark.
Balance there is.
Ooh.
Maybe a gray Jedi there might be.
Oh. Well, anyway, there you go, Steve. Steve, I think this is going to be the type book you're going to read. I put this as one of the books that I would recommend to people who are business owners.
Okay.
I put together a whole list of readings that I think would help individuals. If you have an interest in what a business looks like, or you know how you know what a stock is, what an initial public offering is, how to build a business, thoughts that on creating arrangements with businesses or other people that are mutually beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Where one person's not taking advantage of the other, it's mutually beneficial. This is an incredibly good book on it. And like I said, this is a story about the maturation of Steve Jobs.
All right. It's called To Pixar and Beyond by Lawrence Levy. It's in our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com. Brings us to our appetite or app of the week. And you have been going through the great courses. We've talked about this so many times. I don't know if we've actually put it in the show ever, but we talk about this all the time. Tell us about the great courses.
Now, the great courses are where this company goes out and gets teachers, professors from different universities, and they're going to teach on something kind of subject that you have interest. If you have interest in religion, if you have interest in English, you have interest in history, you have interest in science and physics and biology, they've got a great course for you.
Mm-hmm.
They're typically very expensive. They do have discounts available all the time, so you can sign up for emails. You can get them through Amazon. You can get them through the great courses. You can get them through Audible. There's ones that you can watch. There's ones you can listen. The reason why I'm mentioning this is I drive a lot, and I listen to podcasts, and I listen to all sorts of stuff. But anyway, the one I just was doing was called English Grammar Bootcamp, and this is by Ann Curzan.
Mm-hmm.
And Ann Curzan should be on talk shows everywhere. She is a bubbly, awesome, witty, funny person.
Hmm.
And interestingly enough, as we're doing this, your wife posted on her Facebook feed an article by Ann Curzan. And
nice.
I go, I know her.
Connections.
Oh, it was so awesome. And it was this is a great little course talking about the evolution of English. English is not a static language.
Right. It's a living language. It's changing every day.
Things that meant one thing at one point mean something different today.
Within one generation.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And many of the rules that we take as the hard and fast rules, like it has to be this way.
Right.
We go back and you can find the single seed, that person who said it, and you recognize that person wasn't necessarily an expert. It was just one person's opinion.
Made a decision.
And all of a sudden it became I'm going to give the quote, rule.
Yep.
So what you end up doing is you become very liberal as far as the use of English language. But you also recognize why there's structure. Why we choose to say one way is correct versus another way.
Mm-hmm.
Or more correct or more better, as that would be a good way of
more
saying
gooder. More gooder. Definitely more gooder.
More gooder. So I would love to talk to Ann Curzan. And in fact, if I could find more interviews with her, she is just a beautiful person to listen to.
Hmm.
I highly recommend this. If you don't like this, you can find, there's a million other great courses on there. But anyway,
there's so much information out there. There's so many great conversations that are being had on every topic. And the great courses is a great way to find some start into your journey into those discussions.
And we all get lazy on how we use either language, you know, we'll mispronounce something, misspeak. I do that all the time, by the way. Thank you, Steve, for helping me out. And the other part,
I can edit.
Oh, thank goodness.
It's not a problem.
And that's the great part about writing, too, is the you fall into lazy habits.
Mm-hmm.
You're using something incorrectly, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, you know, we all could take an English course every year or two. Just to tighten this up.
Just a refresher. Just to think about the topic of language and how we use language and how powerful language is. You know, I've got a degree in English. That's my bachelor's degree. And I like talking for a living. That's what I do. They pay me to talk to children. But sure, I could change the way that I express myself and make it better anytime.
Spracken the English gooder.
That's right. Fantastic. So that's the Great Courses. You can find it in our show notes. Go to greatcourses.com and find more information. Brings us to our Now the News. There's lots of things happening out there, but some of them are really important. Google is really important to the internet right now.
It is. In fact, this article is basically suggesting that Google and Facebook potentially are showing up as a monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
The question is whether it's a natural monopoly, which is kind of emerged from order,
mm-hmm.
or whether they're it's having a detrimental impact to the market of ideas. And part of the article is suggesting for Google and Facebook that they are zapping up all the advertising dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So at one time you could run a blog, at one point you could have some kind of service where you could sell advertising in this, and it would, you know, have a value to the advertiser. Well, you know, majority of advertising dollars right now are Facebook and Google on the internet with the ad blockers and all that other stuff. How powerful is your ad really going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite part of this is that Chrome this week, which is owned by Google,
uh-huh.
or Alphabet, or however they want to say it.
Whatever it is this week, yeah.
has brought out their version of Chrome that's going to have an ad blocker.
A built-in ad blocker. I wonder which ads they're going to block. The Google ads, probably, right? Because they are 85% of the ad revenue out there, so they're going to block which ads again now?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So anyway, this is something to watch.
To be aware of, at least.
You know, part of what we want is a good market.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say good, there's going to be different ways of defining it. But there are really right now, while there are alternatives to Google Chrome, and while there are alternatives to Facebook,
mm-hmm.
these are really the dominant players right now.
And with competition, we all win. There's no doubt about that.
Sure, sure. So this is something to be aware of, and just basically, we're going to note this, and we're going to follow this.
Amazon's another company that is dominating the internet right now.
In fact, the number of retailers that are closing down right now, the disruption right now is incredible. So mm-hmm. there's big boxes. We're going to see a lot more of them. If you're in a rural area or an area that doesn't have access to stuff, you know, you could be in a city and not have access. This could be detrimental to you. Think about trying to get to your grocery store, but mm-hmm. you only have one or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, we're having a lot of disruption in the retail market right now. That's good for us in the sense right now, I love Amazon.
Because we have access to Amazon and we can get all of the things basically that we need through Amazon.
But we're also middle class.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that makes it, that's a big difference. I just made a big order from Amazon. I ordered a case of toilet paper, a case of paper towels.
And a quesadilla.
That's right, a quesadilla. A case of tissues. Okay, I've got room in my home to have a case of those.
Right.
So I order, it's not necessarily less expensive to order it this way, but what it does is I just have a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in the past, maybe I'd gone to Costco for that. Or in the past, I would have gone to the grocery store and only picked up a box of tissues. Well, this is a different way of looking at things. And here, let me bring up something. Scott Galloway has a talk on this. And if you go to our notes, you can click through and you can actually watch it. But he said more people today have an Amazon Prime membership, 53% of Americans, than they have a land telephone line, 49%. Now, 10 years ago.
That would have been unheard of.
Absolutely.
So, and extrapolate that 10 years out. What do you need a landline phone for? I don't know what the answer to that question is.
Our kids will never have a landline.
No.
And many people are already dropping their landlines. And that would be the enlightened people.
But having an Amazon Prime membership is kind of a part of society right now.
Well, if you have Amazon Prime membership, you're willing to give them $99. You can have things shipped to you at no cost. You have access to their movies. You have access to their music. If you decide to use one of their other services like Echo or something, you can just order right off of the Echo.
They are Bezos, dominating.
Bezos is an incredibly powerful person.
Second
on this.
Richest person on planet Earth.
And, you know, you can think about what Walmart did to an area. Before that, think of in the 20s or 30s or 40s or 50s, when Sears moved to your area, you had the catalog available to you, the Sears homes. You had access to stuff that you did not have access before then, or it was very difficult to get to it. They made it easy for you. So things rise and fall. And anyway, Amazon seems to be batting 1,000 right now. So it's really, really good stuff.
Other things rise and fall too, like flying cars.
Excellent.
You ready for your flying car?
His boy, Elroy?
Yes.
Daughter, Judy? This is the Jetsons world, baby.
And this is coming potentially in the next 5 years, by 2020.
You said potentially.
Potentially. There's been talk of this for 50, 60 years now, but there are people working on the flying car. This is a Slovakia-based startup that is saying that they're going to have theirs ready for the market for 2020.
It's $1 million, baby.
$1 million flying car.
That's right. It's a Jetson world. It's a Jetsons world, man.
And we live
We're going to have a We're going to have flying cars available to us.
We are going
to
have flying cars. We've been saying that for over 60 years.
And $1 million flying car that will be coming out, say, in 2020, will be the one that we can afford within 10 years.
Yeah. 10 years, man. 10 years.
There you go. That's amazing. Not the only amazing thing that's coming out right now.
There's so many amazing things. We can find the unicorn.
The unicorn frappuccino.
Oh, that, yeah. Made from fresh unicorn.
All right, so last Friday, school had ended, and my daughter, my youngest daughter, and my wife, they went on a quest. they had it. This had made its way out that it was available.
And Starbucks.
So they were going to Starbucks. They went from Starbucks to Starbucks, looking for the elusive unicorn.
That's hilarious.
All right, so they finally got to their third one, and it was not available, and they were talking to the manager. The manager said that they had enough mix that they thought they would have enough for a month.
Okay.
All right, it had sold out within the week. Within the week, they had sold out of all this drink.
Unprecedented.
This pinky,
sugary,
blue drink.
Here, drink this drink, yeah.
And it's got pixie dust sprinkles in it.
Oh, I'm sure.
And a pillow of whipped cream. Steve, this is marketing genius right here.
And the end of humanity.
So you get jacked up on sugar, and you go look for another one. Anyway, they're sold out here in Illinois.
Wow.
That means they're sold out probably everywhere. I'd say within a week or so, the elusive unicorn will be able to be found at your local Starbucks. But it is so amazing that my wife and my daughter, they went on this unicorn
hunt. Went on a
hunt.
Quest. Hours of trying to find this sugary drink. That's great. That is a great moment. I have all sorts of weird things that I do. C2E2 was this weekend, and MST3K, and Doctor Who. This is a great way to spend some time and figure out what you need in the world and then add sugar on top. It's great. Humanity is in the right place. We have all that we need. hopefully the aliens will come by one day and notice all of that we have, Amazon, Google, and unicorns, and they'll send us a message about it.
Here we go. This was from back in March. It says, this is actually an article. It says, humanity might have received signal from aliens that it isn't checking, yeah. Says Harvard professor.
Harvard professor says we may have already received a message from aliens, but we just didn't notice it because of all of the things that we're doing with the unicorns.
I received one. It said, so long and thanks for all the fish.
Mine said, the owls are not what they seem. And oh. Those of you who don't know what those two things are, I no longer can talk to you.
Mine was a Douglas Adams quote.
Mine was Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks, Twin Peaks, Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks.
Which is coming out.
It's coming out on the 21st. On the 21st.
So anyway.
Twin Peaks.
This is the bizarre stuff we find on the internet.
Love it.
And all we need is Harvard professor, aliens, and all of a sudden you've got your whole series, like, just head over to the History Channel.
The truth is out there.
And watch a little Ancient Aliens.
Good stuff. Bring him a unicorn drink.
Aliens, Steve.
Ouch. Elliot, need a unicorn drink.
Reese's Pieces version.
Reese's Pieces backed out of the contract, so Starbucks is going to take over. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week.
I think we can after we find our unicorn. We have to go drive around the country and find one. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TM. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, news.toomuchscrolling.com, and find out. See if there's any unicorns out there. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Essenflow.
We'll see you in the future. I just wanna-